Hello, this is the next in the series of podcasts that we are running on various topics within the spheres of technology, intellectual property, and data privacy. Surprisingly enough, this is on data privacy. My name is Barry Fishley. I'm a partner at Wild Gotchel & Manges in London, and I'm joined by my colleagues Muzaffar Shah, Bryony Pollard, and Charlotte DeVitry. Today we are tackling the top five GDPR myths, and we're going to bust those myths. What's the first myth then, Charlotte?
Myth number one, you must have consent to process personal data.
No doubt you will have received and are probably still receiving emails from organisations stating that under the GDPR, they require your consent to continue to contact you after the 25th of May. Such emails are often unnecessary and in some cases unlawful. At best, I think they confuse two distinct points. The first is holding personal data, which is governed by the GDPR, and two, direct marketing by email and or SMS text messages using that personal data, which is governed by the Privacy and Electronic Communications Regulations, which are otherwise known as the PEC regs. So processing, which includes holding of personal data, is lawful under the GDPR, provided at least one of the processing conditions in Article 6 applies. Obtaining consent from the data subject is only one of these processing conditions. So seeking consent to process personal data may in fact be unnecessary if another processing condition exists. An organisation may lawfully process a data subject's personal data if it is, for example, necessary for the performance of a contract. And even if an organisation relies on consent, that doesn't mean that they need to obtain renewed consent. Recital 171 of the GDPR states that organisations can rely on existing consent, provided that it's in line with GDPR requirements. And those requirements are that the consent is freely given, specific, informed, and unambiguous. In any event, relying on consent as a processing condition is a risk because it can always be revoked. The PEC regs govern marketing to individuals by electronic means, including emails and text messages. Organisations must obtain consent from an individual to market to them in this way, or they can rely on the so-called soft opt-in, which is where an individual is an existing customer of the organisation and the communication concerns similar products or services that that customer has obtained from that organisation in the past, provided that the individual is given information on how they may opt out of such communications in every communication which is sent to them. It's important that organisations understand that seeking to renew consent comes with pitfalls. If an organisation receives no response, it will not be able to market to those data subjects, as they will not have the consent to do so. Some organisations have used the introduction of the GDPR as an opportunity to cleanse their databases, but they also run the risk of decimating their database of data subjects to whom they may market to if they don't receive a response from them. Further, emailing an individual who is not a previous customer, asking for their consent to market to them, is considered a marketing communication in and of itself and is therefore unlawful if the organisation doesn't have the data subject's consent, which meets the GDPR requirements, to do so.
Myth number two. Regulators such as the UK Information Commissioner's Office, the ICO, will impose huge fines on organisations and will make early examples of organisations.
Under the GDPR, the ICO has the power to issue maximum fines for serious breaches of 20 million euros or 4% of worldwide turnover, whichever is the higher. However, the ICO said it is scaremongering to suggest that we'll be making early examples of organisations for minor infringements or that maximum fines will become the norm, and that hefty fines will be reserved for those organisations that persistently, deliberately or negligently flout the law. The ICO never invoked their maximum powers under the Data Protection Act 1998, which were fines of up to £500,000, and have stated that the ICO intends to use its powers under the GDPR proportionately and judiciously. When determining the severity of pecuniary sanctions, the ICO will take into account the organisation's cooperation with the ICO following breaches. It is also worth remembering that a fine is only one of the measures included in the GDPR to encourage compliance.
Myth number three. All personal data breaches need to be reported to a supervisory authority, such as the UK's ICO, and as soon as a data breach occurs.
This is not true. The threshold to determine whether an incident needs to be reported to the supervisory authority, such as the ICO, the Information Commissioner's Office, depends on the risk it poses to the individual whose data has been compromised. Reporting a personal data breach to the ICO is mandatory under the GDPR if it is likely to result in a risk to the rights and freedoms of that individual. In such a case, the notification must be made without undue delay and, where feasible, no later than 72 hours after having become aware of it. If there is a likelihood of a high risk to the individual's rights and freedoms, the controller of the organisation needs to report the breach to the individuals themselves, in addition to the supervisory authority, without undue delay. And indeed, the ICO's guidance indicates that high-risk situations are likely to include where the individual suffers significant detrimental effects. So, for example, identity theft is likely to be a situation where a notification is required.
Myth number four. The GDPR creates an EU-wide harmonised set of rules. If an organisation is compliant in one EU country, they are compliant in all.
Well, it's true to say that the creation of a set of rules harmonised across the EU was a desired outcome of the GDPR. However, whilst there is more consistency now across the EU, the numerous derogations granted to member states mean that there are no fully harmonised rules. Furthermore, some member states will continue to have their own local laws, which will continue in effect irrespective of the GDPR. In addition, each independent supervisory authority will issue its own guidelines and decisions, so there may be differences of approach to interpretation and enforcement.
Myth number five. Every organisation needs a data protection officer, or DPO.
Well, the truth is only certain types of organisations need to have a data protection officer. Either the organisation processes personal data as a public authority or body, except for the courts acting in their judicial capacity, or the organisation's core activities consist of processing operations which, by virtue of their nature, scope and or purpose, require regular and systemic monitoring of data subjects on a large scale. Or finally, the core activities of the organisation consist of processing on a large scale of special category data and personal data relating to criminal convictions and offences. When determining whether processing is on a large scale, the ICO's guidelines state that the number of data subjects concerned ought to be considered, together with the volume of personal data processed, the range of different data items processed, the geographical extent of the activities, and the duration of the processing activities. So typical examples of organisations which should have a DPO include hospitals and insurance companies and certain types of telecom service providers. It's also worth noting that in certain countries within the EU, there will be independent local laws which mandate a data protection officer. So, for example, those laws will continue to apply in Germany. Well, thanks for listening. We would also like to invite you to our forthcoming GDPR Breakfast Client Seminar, which is on the 5th of July. During that seminar, we'll be focusing on the data privacy landscape going forward, what we perceived to be issues and trends which organisations ought to be aware of now that the rules have significantly changed. As part of that, we'll be looking at any major claims or investigations that have been undertaken, and we'll also give some thoughts as to how we think things will pan out in terms of the enforcement approach by the different regulators across Europe. In addition to that, we'll also be considering the remaining challenges for organisations who are seeking to fully comply. For example, we know that certain organisations have had challenges in relation to the right to be forgotten, the so-called erasure right. And we would like to see and give you some thoughts as to how organisations have either circumvented those types of challenges or mitigated against the risk of those challenges coming up. We'll also be joined by an IT consultancy, so he will give us his thoughts and observations about the compliance process and thoughts for the future. So we hope you can join us. Thank you and goodbye.